Welcome to the Sedona Soul Sister Show, down-to-earth discussions on metaphysics, spirituality, paranormal, and healing. The Sedona Soul Sisters are the most trusted psychic mediums in Sedona. They have offices in Sedona where they see clients from all over the world. And now, today's show with Roz, Ivory, Terri-Ann, and Melissa. Welcome to the Sedona Soul Sister Show, down-to-earth discussions on spirituality, paranormal, metaphysics, and healing topics. The Sedona Soul Sisters are the most trusted psychic mediums in Sedona, Arizona. We see clients from all over the world, and we are Rosalind Reynolds, myself, Ivory Lanoue, Terri-Ann Russell, and we are here today to talk to you about dealing with toxic people. And we were just chatting a little bit before the show started. It seems like that's getting to be something we have to deal with more commonly, not just us, but we're hearing from clients too and family, friends. And you know, that's just a byproduct of additional stress and worry and fear happening. People lose their manners. They forget to be nice. So what are some of the tricks you ladies have or methods you have of dealing with somebody? And if you have a story you can share about that, I think it would be helpful. If you're not ready and you want to think about it a bit, that's okay too.
I think you always have to try to see, no matter how the other person, whatever their perspective is, how they're seeing this, you know, you always have to try and, in addition to whatever you're seeing, you have to try and look at it from their perspective too. And, you know, it's very difficult with toxic people who are overreactive because they're usually pretty unreasonable. So looking at something, you know, from the logical, a little bit of distance and objectivity, looking at whatever their situation is. I try to just always be patient, especially when I know, you know, that they're, whatever they're dealing with is through their lens of how they see things. And we can't always have that perspective, you know, realize what's gone on in their world. So it, I think, you know, just having some compassion and some patience and trying to be reasonable and explain things in a reasonable way. And if there is no explaining, you know, a lot of people, there's no discussion. It's their way or the highway. So you're kind of wasting your time somewhat with those people. It's good to just get as much resolution as you can get and then move on.
I agree.
Difficult.
One thing I learned that was very valuable lessons working at the psychiatric hospital years ago was when people were difficult, escalated in their behavior, the best thing you can do is talk very quietly like this, just kind of soften your voice down and don't have any facial expression, what they call a flat affect. Like that calms people down. And I've practiced, just kind of experimented with that through the years outside of the psychiatric world, where you're just interacting in public and somebody comes at you, you didn't expect it. But if you can just remember to not do what they're doing, like if you mimic what they're doing and you raise your voice and your energy gets all escalated, they're going to get worse. And it just becomes this vicious cycle where things can really escalate. But it's something about having to strain a little to hear what the other person is saying. So if you just talk really quietly, where they have to quiet down to hear you, and don't show facial expression, just don't get upset. It's hard, but you can train yourself to do that as like a second nature. And I credit, seriously, like the time I worked in the psychiatric hospital taught me to do that. So sometimes I look like I don't care when something's happening, but it's just that I go into that mode because I don't want to make it worse. You know, especially in the heat of the moment, things can really get out of control.
Yeah, I find it's easier sometimes if it's somebody outside your family. You can sort of step back a little and use that, you know, oh, you know, that soft voice. And it is difficult. I have to tell you, from being in a toxic relationship, learning what the triggers are, learning how to, like you said, soften your voice and just not put forth anything that would seem aggressive, and just be in that sort of neutral space. It does take time to learn, but you can learn it. And I think what happens, that other person doesn't have that fuel to keep going, you know?
Yeah. And I think one of the biggest examples I saw of that, it was really horrifying. I was in a meeting that I was running, a social group, and all of a sudden, like, this real toxic person started just standing up and spewing these venomous things at people in the group. And it was like, it got so bad that you could feel like this vortex of energy swirling. And I felt like I literally like pressed my back against the wall because it was sucking the breath out of my lungs. And I was horrified at what was happening. And several like younger people were standing up and yelling back at them. And it was just horrendous. Like, that was the first time I really felt the energy of the discord itself. And I had to just stand there quiet before they all just kind of looked over at me. And I just went like this. I didn't say anything. I just went like this. And they all kind of sunk down in their seats. And then that vortex of energy went kind of whoosh down to the floor. And I felt like I'd been beat up emotionally, just being there for that. It was really traumatizing. But it was also a good lesson that how powerful that kind of energy is. So we can either let it be powerful in a way that bullies us into doing exactly what they want or responding the same way and adding to the fuel to the fire, or we can let it be powerful in a way that we recognize it and we de-escalate it in our own less obvious way. So, but you know what, Terri-Anne, you bring up such a good subject, because I think the most difficult situation is when the toxic person is in your family, somebody that you are close with and you feel like you need to see, or you have to see because of other family regularly. You can't just, it's hard to cut family out of your life, though people do. People do if it gets toxic enough.
Yeah, it's very difficult. I think a lot of my clients too have similar experiences. And like you said, if you know, if you have a child with somebody and you have to deal with that person often, it's difficult. But I've also learned that also that is the best way to step back and sort of, you know, not necessarily see their perspective, because I think sometimes it's difficult from my perspective to see a narcissist's perspective, but just see like the pain, like I describe, like I always say that.
Whoops. Hello? Hello? Hello?
Oh, okay. My.
Is that better?
Am I back?
Yeah. Okay. I wasn't gone, but something happened. So weird. Too many people on the internet at my daughter's house. That's probably it. Everybody's working from home today. So you were talking about your family interactions.
I was saying that a lot of times, if you can see the perspective behind that, behind a lot of anger is a lot of pain and suffering sometimes. Mm-hmm. And so although difficult to see the perspective of somebody yelling at you or bullying you, looking at the feeling that's behind that anger is also, you know, it's empowering to see, all right, they are that way because they are suffering themselves. And so stepping back, putting yourself outside of that sometimes is helpful.
That's where it's
helpful. I think that's a really good point.
And that's where I think it's helpful to be an empath, because you can maybe step back into observer mode and then tune in as an empath to what are the emotions under their behavior. If it's somebody you care about, somebody you love, somebody you have to deal with that's going to blow up the family if you don't interact with them, it's worth doing this. You know, some stranger in public you probably will never see again, why would you bother? You know, de-escalate it, get out of the area, move on, you know? We were just talking about
some of the videos that I have seen online of people in airports on airplanes, you know, especially on the plane, you're in a pretty confined little space there and you don't have much really potential to get out of their direction of negative energy to you. And their, you know, reactions are sometimes so violent. And I've been pretty stunned. It's been a few months since I traveled, but you just were traveling, Ivory, so maybe you can reflect on that. What do you feel? I feel, you know, you can always, when you're in an airport, everybody's stressed out anyway, trying to go from point A to point B, trying to keep it all together. But these serious, I mean, hostile, resentful, angry altercations that are going on are pretty uncalled for. I mean, get a grip, people. And that's exactly what you're saying. You know, take a step back.
We were talking about it before the show started today about airports and airplane flights and how I get on the airplane and I say a little prayer. Please let this be, I say boring, but really uneventful flight. Let this just get there in peace and harmony. And I start putting the protective bubbles around myself, my seat, the row, the plane, everybody in it. I haven't had any problems yet, but I think if I did, I probably would, if somebody's close to me and I'm involved in it somehow, like if they're aiming it at me, because I can't imagine me starting that. I just can't. But if it's aimed at me, then I probably would fall back on another technique that I learned through default, which is that if you say something quietly that triggers them back to childhood, but not in a shaming way, but just quietly, like, you're acting like a child right now. Or, you know, this is, you know, you're really embarrassing yourself right now. Not yell it where everybody can hear it, but just quietly, like, it's amazing. I'm going to give you an example of this. Back when I worked in radio, the DJs did not want to host these concerts for visiting bands. And so I'm not going to say who it was, but it was a well-known rock band who came to town. And I, part of my job after the show was I needed to get autographs from everybody in the band on a radio station t-shirt to give to the boss because he liked to display them in the station. And he gave, you know, I had a Sharpie for that purpose and a shirt. So I got everyone's autographs on it and I handed it to the lead singer and he put it in his pocket and he had a bunch of admiring groupies around him. I was not one of them, just so you know, dude. And he said something about, oh, thanks, I needed that pen. And I said, I really need that. I need to get you to sign this. And he was being a turd and I'm trying to be nice about it. And he threw it in my face and told me to go F myself. Well, my friend, who was the photographer for the station, was behind me. He jumped off that chair and I felt his energy. He was like, gonna go get that guy. I'm like, no, no. And I just said to him, I said, you know, that was not very nice. And he just kind of, his whole energy just kind of went, and he handed me the pin and that was the end of it. You know, so he was like winding himself up for something. But I learned that, I don't even know why I said that. I don't know what gave me that idea. But since then, I've used that a few times, not that those words, but that technique a few times to just end it. And it seems to bring people out of this puffed up energy they can get into where they're either trying to make a point or they're showing off for somebody. It just deflates it, like pops it like a bubble. And then you're dealing with a regular person again. So just something. And I said it really quietly. You know, I just said, you know, that wasn't very nice. And that was the end of it. So sometimes we learn these things. We don't, you know, I don't know if the angels told me to say that or what. I don't know where that came from, but it's not my nature to get in altercations or to get in big, loud arguments either. Like, that's just not me. So I'm always looking for ways to tone this down, but I'm totally with you in this, Terri Ann. Like, when it's family, it's difficult. And I don't like to cut any family out. So I have some techniques that I use that are mostly just telling the person, usually once we're alone again, I'll just say, you know, what you said back there really hurt my feelings, or I found that offensive and I just want to tell you why. It doesn't do well to tell them in front of the other family because then it just causes more discord. But I try to just like not say anything at the time and deal with it as soon as possible right after that. But there's been plenty of times that if the toxicity continues, there's people who think that it's funny or okay to say mean things and say, well, we're just joking. Oh, we're just, he's just joking. But if it hurts you and they know it, it's not joking. That's just being abusive. So there comes a time when you have to ask yourself, you know, is being around this person healthy for me? Is it doing anything at all to serve me? Is it tearing me down? Is it damaging my energy? And you know what it is. You feel that when your energy is being damaged. So there's plenty of times, and I prepare myself for this, where I will just, if possible, I'll just get up. I'll say my goodbyes and hug everybody and tell them I love them. And I'll drive a long distance home because I'm not willing to be treated like that. And I'm not willing to keep being treated like that. You know, if you say what you have to say and no change, then the ball has been put in your court. Either you're going to accept it or you're not. But there's a lot of gray area between taking the abuse and cutting someone completely out of your life. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, that doesn't really work.
It doesn't what?
Doesn't really work well, trying to cut people, just, you know, never see someone again or never interact.
I know people.
It just doesn't really. Yeah. Not in a family situation. It just, you know, time goes on. It impacts other people in the family, their relationships, things start spiraling out of control. So if you can make peace with it and, you know, express your feeling about what was going on and then kind of pleasantly back out, that's usually a good solution, I think.
Some people have trouble drawing boundaries.
It's hard. It's a very tough call.
Or like you said, leave the situation and then, you know, maybe not be so eager to go to the next event. You know what I mean? People seem to get the picture of what you're saying without really saying it sometimes. What's hard for me is like when people go back to the past, well, you did this, you did that, blah, blah, blah. We can sit here all day, right? Throwing the ball back at one another. It's not going to change what happened in the past. You know, if you have an issue with me today, stay on the subject. I found that through marriage counseling that I went through one time. A lot of times in relationships, we go all the way back to the beginning. Well, you said this to me in 1954. you know, it serves no purpose, but it's like some of that, something that happened at that time that you didn't address at that time. So then it resurfaces again. And for you, you know, being in that toxic relationship or being around toxic family, it really, I think you hit it on the head. It's about setting those boundaries. I set the line. I used to set the line. He used to cross the line. I'd set the line again. He'd cross that line, you know, until I finally had to really set those boundaries really tight and end that relationship. Not that I'm advocating for that, but sometimes that is necessary in a romantic relationship where you've done these things, said these things, and that person is not adhering to those things. So it was nothing on my part that I was doing because I was setting the boundaries, but I kept allowing him to cross them from time to time. And so he'd say, oh, okay, I could cross this one. I'm going to go even further until I finally cut that off. And that is necessary sometimes.
It is. And I know some people literally to save their lives because their relatives would refuse to respect any boundaries at all and were so abusive on every level. Their counselors advised them, this person, if you're ready to cut them out of your life, you need to do that because they're just hurting you every time you're around them, every time you speak to them. And maybe things will be better in the future. Maybe they'll calm down, but maybe not. And so if you're not going to protect you, who is? You know, that's why this whole thing of setting boundaries, like just know that if you start setting boundaries with somebody who you haven't set them with before, expect them to push back. And then you're going to be more firm and they're going to push back harder. And it could probably get really ugly. Like that's been my experience. It's going to get ugly, but you just have to serenely and resolutely hold fast with your boundaries. You know, I will not let you call me names. I will not let you put me down like that. I will not let you, whatever it is, you know, if you do that, here's what's going to happen, you know? And for me, when it happens, I leave. If I can, you know, I'll leave and go home, because why would I want to stay in an environment like that? You know, that would be self-abuse. I'm not throwing myself to the lions. So what if it's just somebody that you come across? Let's say people you know are difficult, that are, you know, socially, but they're not your best friends, people you come across socially. Any thoughts on that? One thing I like to do is avoid them. Like if I'm going to a big event and I Definitely. See that person's there, I go around. I just don't even want to interact with them because they're such dark cloud. You know, why would I want to do that in my social time? Why? So I would avoid them. And if they come up to me, I like put up a bubble around myself and between me and them that, you know, I don't want to interact a whole bunch with you. So I'll be very surface and like, hello, how you doing? Nice to see you. Goodbye. And on to somebody else. You know, don't leave yourself in their target area too long either. Why?
That's a good point.
What about
really good to just sort of spirit yourself out of that potential to have someone bringing out the big guns and taking pot shots, trying to start something?
And if you have a history of that person maybe took a disliking to you, or there's something about you they don't like, some, who knows, some dislike, you know that. Don't expect that to change miraculously. You know, just get yourself, sometimes I'll even avoid an event if I know that person is there or persons are there. I really think that in any group of a certain number of people, there's going to be a percentage that are truly toxic people. As we know, there's far more narcissists in the world than we initially thought there were. The number is pretty high. So odds are you have some in, maybe in your family, probably in your circle of acquaintances, if not, you know, probably not friends, but acquaintances. So what about toxic people in the workplace?
That's a tough one.
That is a tough one. When I was in corporate, it's really, and I was not spiritually aware or anything at that time, but I found they could easily bring my energy down and get me into that space of like, everything sucks. And, you know, it was like really difficult. And I was much more, I was much more explosive when I was younger. I didn't know how to adhere to all the energy that I was feeling. I think there's definitely ways to, going back to what you said earlier, speaking in a softer tone, you know, that's not acceptable. Do not speak to me like that. Rather than, you know, my younger days of blowing up and saying, you know, I'll beat your ass.
I love that.
I never had that reaction.
Oh, I certainly did.
I know.
You got the two Aries here, so watch out.
That's just not my nature.
That gets explosive when you got the Aries personality.
I was like the guy behind you. I'm like, what'd you say?
I'm very analytical. Like I had problems. There were people who were wildly unprofessional in a professional setting, like working within the mental health system. People who were walking around just dropping drama and dropping little nastiness everywhere they went, and then expect, and sometimes being supported by the supervisor to be like that because they reminded them of themselves, which is scary. So things like that are, I find it helpful if somebody's doing that kind of thing, they're interacting with you very unprofessionally. is to take them aside. I'm always big on respect. I mean, you respect somebody, you take them aside, you don't talk to them about it in front of other people, no matter how mad they've made you, how humiliating they've been. You ask to speak to them in private and you say, what you just did was very unprofessional and I have issues with that. I'm not going to be able to work with you when you're acting that way. So I need you to come to me when you can be professional. And it'll usually take multiple times of having a conversation like that. And some people are not, have no intention of changing. No intention. And so there's times when if it's bad enough, if it's impeding your work, if it's affecting other people, you might need to bring that to the attention of somebody. You know, you might have to get that taken care of. But I've always been of a mind that one bad apple can really ruin a wonderful group of people, can really ruin a work environment. I mean, I bet everyone's seen that. You've experienced it where you have a great workplace, you're really happy with your supervisor, your coworkers, and then somebody new comes in and just upsets everything. So my feeling on that is they need to get in line or get out. You know, get in line or get out, because I don't want that kind of discord. I don't like drama. You know, I don't want somebody coming in and causing that kind of problem. I think that work should not be like that. Well, when I worked for other people, like big companies where I was just, you know, one of the managers there, I didn't have a whole lot of control about that. Even as director of mental health, I only had control over the mental health department. But when you own your own business, you can do that. And I think people are slow to deal with it because they think it'll get better. They hope it'll get better. But if you've talked to somebody again and again and again, and there's no change, you really need to do a heart to heart with yourself as to whether it's worth keeping them on. And now more than ever, with such a shortage of employees, you really have to think three times about it. I get it. However, do you want your business to get wrecked? Do you want other people to leave? Because I've seen that plenty of times where one toxic person staying on causes great people to move on to other companies. So it's not just about whether they stay or go. It's how it affects your whole team.
I think that's a really good point, because I've been in circumstances, we all have, where everybody is on board, everybody's coming in the door with a great attitude, and then you get the one person who is distraught for whatever reason, not happy, and they're venting. And by the end of the day, everybody's just ready to get away from that person. So, I mean, I think sometimes realistically, that person either needs to have some counseling or something to change their focus. And then if they're not going to change after that, they're impacting the whole team. They have to, go.
Yeah. So, I mean, everybody has their bad days. None of us are perfect. None of us are always in a great mood. Sometimes we need to vent. Sometimes we need to discuss things that are not so pleasant, but we're talking about a repeat person coming in, and they're like a little dark cloud coming in the door on a regular basis. Sometimes you can talk to people and turn it around. Maybe they don't realize how bad it is or how they're affecting people, but the truly toxic people, they really do know. I hope you know that. Like, they do know what they're like and they don't care. So it's a little bit different story. Like, they just like to rile people up and cause problems. Do you know what I'm talking about? I mean, am I the only one here who knows those people?
I can't fully agree with that, because I think when you're dealing with the true narcissist personality or psychopath personality, and there seem to be a tremendous number of those people these days, they don't see themselves. They're wonderful in their world. And everything they do, they consider to be, you know, a part of that perfection that they think they have. And that's what it makes dealing with them so incredibly difficult, I think, is because you try to get into the subject and get them more of the mindset like, maybe I should change my behavior and getting them there is hard.
It isn't those people I'm talking about. It's people who through habit of years think they're funny and people have told them again and again, that's inappropriate. We don't like hearing that. Don't act like that. They don't care. They just don't care what people think. They don't not be narcissists or sociopaths. Pardon me, but they sure, you know, they can be very loving and caring. And so narcissists and sociopaths generally aren't that. I'm going to take a little break to cough a minute here.
But I agree. Yeah, the narcissist personality and the sociopath personality is probably the hardest personalities to deal with, right? Because they don't see anything wrong with what they're doing. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, if you're dealing with that type of personality and that type of person, you really have to take a serious look at your life, how you want it to be different, because they're not going to change. There's no way that they're apt to changing. So you have to really look at yourself then and say, am I going to live like this forever? Or is this something I can choose to live with forever? And look at that part of your life and make those changes accordingly.
I totally agree, because my first marriage was to a sociopath, and his mother tried to warn me and I didn't get it. I was so young. I didn't understand what she was trying to tell me. And I found out over the years, but I tried to make that work for 10 years. I tried to make that work. And it was just, you know, one level of abuse upon another. No, never felt bad about it, never apologized, never tried to make it right, which is all kind of heads up. If you're seeing a counselor, they'll be like, something's not right here. Something's going on, like sociopath, narcissist. And sure enough, that's what it was. And it did come to a place where I knew I had to leave, no matter how hard it was. I had to leave to save myself and our daughter. I absolutely had to. It was the best thing I did. And that wasn't easy either, because this person would still reach out through, back then we didn't have computers yet, but he would reach out through long letters and be very vile, attacking, nasty to both of us. Got to the point where I'd get those in and have a burning ceremony without even opening them. It's like, I didn't even want to know what they said. You know, why would I? But it was hard. It was really hard, because I was raised, you get married and you stay married and you make it work no matter what. But I knew if I did that, I'd be sacrificing myself and my daughter. And I wasn't willing to do that. You know, you just get stronger as you get older too. And luckily I had friends who helped me just see that too. Was just like, you can do this. Like, you can do this. You're going to not only survive, but thrive once you get away from that. And that was true.
So imagine now today, with all the access that we have to one another, how people can find you and track you down and see where you are and what you're doing, and the ability for them to really latch on. You know, before, like you said, it was through letters or maybe even a beep or something like that. But nowadays, it's really, really tough to really separate yourself and then sort of disconnect from all of that without being, you know, found.
Yeah, it is. I've experienced some of that too in recent years. It's very nefarious and sneaky how you can be attacked on and on after, even after you leave the relationship. But it's really about those boundaries. And I think that's why I like to focus on that so much in sessions, is to help people come to a place where they see they need to do it, help them create some good, healthy boundaries, and then support them as they hold strong and firm against people trying to step over those boundaries, because they will.
We're mulling on that.
Yes. There's a lot. I mean, you can't get to the age we are and not have had numerous interactions with people. Lately, I've had some crazy ones where I'm just like in a grocery store and somebody starts verbally attacking me over some bizarre thing. And I just like, my thinking on a case like that is I usually just let them wear it out and I walk away. It's like, what is with you? You know, but I don't want to get involved in that. I want to interact with that. And I think there's just so many people so stressed out right now that they're beyond a breaking point, and it just, you know, takes next to nothing, including nothing, just something perceived in their mind, for them to snap and start acting crazy. And like I said, we'll go back to kind of loop back to where we started of not wanting to make it worse. And it's hard self-control to not react in anger or in whatever, to react in kind or explain yourself or tell them off or whatever it is you feel that initial reaction to do, to fight that. It's hard.
I think
you think, go ahead, Wes.
I just think this time, you know, this, especially this last 2 years with everything with the pandemic, you know, I mean, obviously when you tell people, okay, get in your homes and stay there, for a lot of people, that is a huge challenge. So, you know, they're suddenly they're face to face with those family relationships that are difficult if they have that, with dealing with being, you know, cabin fevery, trapped in an environment. The people that work at home and then, you know, their day ends and they're still at home. For a lot of people, that, you know, was a good thing, but there's a percentage of people that is a very difficult go. And I think, you know, I've talked to a lot of people in the teaching profession. I have a lot of clients that are teachers, counselors. You know, that's for those parents who were put in that position where they suddenly became the teacher, and we have someone here who is experience this. So, you know, that you could really speak on that expertly. You know, that's a huge stress to deal with, especially I think for people who have numerous children. Like I look back and I think, okay, how would I have done this with four children, especially, you know, at the different levels and trying to work with that, I probably would have lost my mind. So I can't imagine, because I don't mind teaching. I mean, and I don't mind, you know, spending time with my kids, and I would have enjoyed all of that, but I never imagined myself to have teaching skills, you know? So I think we've been through a very interesting and challenging period here. And it's really, there are a lot of people that it's really just been so much more than they ever imagined. And those kind of challenges and those kind of stressful situations that you can't get away from, I mean, it's there every day, has brought out some really interesting reactions with people. So I think we got to look at that and kind of keep it in mind.
I agree. I think trying to think about why they might be, I find myself saying this to other people who are riled up about something somebody said or did. And I'm like, sounds like they might've had a really horrible day, or they might've had a really hard week, or they might just have stuff going on in their personal life that is carrying over into their work. Cause that was excessive, over the top what they said or did, but normally they're not like that. So, you know, why, let's think about why. A kind reason that they might be acting like this, that you could let it go for one time and maybe talk to them later, you know, if you want to talk to them later. But I'm a big believer in, if at all possible, wait till everybody's calmed down to have a conversation about it, because when someone's already escalated, that's not a good time to try to have a conversation with them about their behavior at all. Unlikely to go well, right?
Yeah. Try it. It's been, I feel like it's been a huge lesson for most of us this past couple of years in some format. So there's a good side to that. I mean, there is progress, there is learning, but it's also really difficult.
We've learned that we can handle things we thought we couldn't, that we can make it through times that seems interminable. I remember when they first said something about this pandemic, it was like 1 month into it, I'd been working from home And they said, this might go on 18 months. And I burst into tears. I'm like, 18 months. Oh my God, you know. But and now it's been more than 18 months. I'm back to the office, but at that time, just to go through all of that 18 months just seemed unimaginable. So we're stronger than we thought we were. You know, we can make it through times that make normal times seem easy, breezy. You know, maybe it's to help us appreciate normal times better. I'm not sure. I think there's always many lessons to be gained in any circumstance you're in or you're going through. Sometimes it's hard to see them when you're in it though, right?
Absolutely.
What about for your kids? What was that, Roz?
I just said everything's a lesson.
It is a lesson. It is. Just sometimes we're not ready to look for it, right? We're just trying to get through it.
Not ready to see that lesson yet.
What about if it's your children and it's dealing with toxic children at school or toxic teachers? Have you had that experience?
Oh, yes.
So have I. What did you do?
I tried exactly what we have been talking about. Just tried to realize the situation. One of my children especially is just incredibly bright. So everything for him was like how fast he could get done with everything. And of course, the minute he was done with bell work or whatever they were working on in the classroom, then he was bored. And he's a lot like me. And as soon as he's bored, he's a challenge. So, you know, it's turned out in the bigger picture, I think those are people who, you know, are geared, they're driven and they're geared for some aspect of satisfying the challenges in their life. But dealing with their teachers and dealing with people who had to deal with them in that circumstance certainly was a learning lesson, I would say. And also for me, it challenged me to be patient. I mean, a lot of the teachers in the district where my kids were moving into retirement age. And I just don't think they had the energy, the same level of energy that they once had. So that was like my, you know, my wake up call of like, okay, you know, and it worked out from the standpoint of getting my son to see his behavior too and realize what toxic, you know, reactions he was having. So it all turned out good, but in the long run, I think working in those kind of situations where you're dealing with large school districts, your children, everything else, I mean, it has the potential to get pretty crazy. You see it when you watch the news, where you see people just losing it, you know. First, they were losing it at the school. Now they're home. They're being challenged every second of the day. So,
and that's why it's so pretty demanding to teach your children how to set boundaries from a very young age. You know, if you don't like that, you need to tell them, you can't do that to me. That's not okay. You know, they need to learn that. And it's really a learned behavior. So if your parents don't set boundaries, you don't see them, hear them doing it, you don't know how to do it. So set boundaries and let your kids see that and hear it. Set boundaries with them, what you'll accept and what you won't accept, and then hold firm with that because you are modeling that for your children. So that's probably the biggest kindness you can do for them with them moving forward and dealing with their own toxic people, because they will. There's not a person on this earth who's going to avoid that.
And, you know, in the home, I mean, in the sibling relationships, I think that's very powerful. Some people, you know, refuse to accept those boundaries, and it's quite a challenge. to work those situations out so that they're working it out amongst themselves. Pretty tough.
As but much as powerful. Yeah, somebody's getting hurt, seriously hurt.
But yes.
I'm so glad my grandsons have gone beyond that. They've reached a stage now where one is 14 and one is 7, and they just exist around each other peacefully. It's like, oh, heavenly.
That's such a nice thing, isn't it?
It really is. It's been so harmonious, so nice, and much more fun, and much more fun for his parent, their parents, I'll tell you that. But thank you for joining us today. We so appreciate you tuning in, whether you join us live or you are joining us later, watching on our YouTube channel or listening on podcast platforms. Tune in next Friday. Our topic is Andromedans. So if you're following our first of the month series on different alien races, next week is Andromedans. So we will look forward to that one. And in the meantime, we hope you have a beautiful week. Thank you for listening to the Sedona Soul Sisters Show. If you'd like more information about the Sedona Soul Sisters and their services, visit their website at SedonaSoulSisters.com. Subscribe to our show here so you don't miss a thing. All of us at Sedona Soul Sisters hope you have an enlightening week.